Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of all ages. I'm John St. Germain. Welcome to Crystal Silence League Hour, episode 36. And tonight, once again, we will be examining the Mahasatipatthana Sutta, the Great Exposition on Awakening, by none other than the Lord Buddha. Thanks for showing up. We have a nice full house tonight here in the studio. And we will be looking and examining this complex, difficult, and wonderful, challenging exposition by the Buddha. The first part we looked at last week. We're going to be looking at the rest of it this week. And let's do that after a musical intermission. By all means, grab your crystal balls if you have them, a cold and/or warm drink if you need it, and a cold and/or warm friend if you have one. We shall be back momentarily.
When people come to see them, they really are the freedom, the Addam Family.
Neat. Sweet. Petite.
Get a witch's all on, a roof that you can fall on. We're gonna pay a call on the Addam Family.
The Addam Family. I'm playing that every week this month in honor of Halloween, Samhain, or what have you. Tonight's Crystal Silence League is brought to you, of course, by Lucky Mojo Curio Company and LMC Radio Network. And tonight's Crystal of the Week is Creedite. You may see a picture of that in our slideshow. It's a wonderful, beautiful little crystal. It comes in a number of colors, mostly orange, purple and colorless, and we'll discuss that in a moment. Creedite is we bring you the crystals you've never heard of on this show. Everybody discusses quartz and sodalite and things like that. We discuss the things you've never heard of. Not an expensive crystal. It is a useful crystal, and it will help you unblock. It unlocks and unblocks. It helps you unblock. It helps you if you procrastinate, helps you follow through with plans and decisions that you've been postponing. If you have a workplace where nobody works, you can put this there, and it encourages high productivity. It also helps you get past broken heart. If you have a, imagine a love you've had that can never work out. You know, you were in a relationship and you know it wasn't going to work, but you still hung up on it. Creedite helps you get by it. And maybe you had a love affair that broke up, and you know you're never going to get back together, but you keep holding out hope for it. Creedite will help you set that illusion aside. The purple creedite is great for unlocking the barriers in meditation that keep you from attaining the next level, especially if you're looking for guides and angels and connecting to the higher self and the Akashic records and things like that. It can help you gain the confidence and insights that you need. It restores balance when there's imbalance. It restores clarity when there's unclarity. It helps you blow open. It's the crystal version of Road Opener or Blockbuster, and can also enhance those spells if you work them. Orange creedite can stimulate your creative vision. It's great for creative blockage. It helps raise the vibration of your creative energy, and it will also help purify other crystals. If your other crystals are all clogged up and blocked up, you can use the creedite to help clean your crystals that aren't working very well. White or colorless creedite can unblock the entire energy field from root chakra to crown chakra. It can help your entire physical body unblock. It can help you make necessary changes. Now, one of the interesting uses of this is the activation of dormant information, stuff that you know that you don't know. Does that make sense to you? It'll help you remember things that you don't know that you know. But also it unlocks cellular memory. And this is an interesting phenomena I've been reading about lately. Apparently you can inherit memories from your ancestors. And those of us involved in magic and spiritual work know this. But science has been replicating this and saying that, for instance, if you have an ancestor who experienced a trauma, this can cause you to have an anxiety disorder. You know, thanks, grandfather. But also, it can be an explanation for why something seemed familiar. Like the first time I read about Buddhism, I knew it. I said, this is familiar. I know where this is going. And there are other things in my life that way, too. It was just like I was just remembering it. And sometimes you meet people and you say, I know you. I know you. And there are magical explanations for this, but there's also apparently scientific background to it that we inherit memories, and this is cellular memory. And there's also a phenomenon called chimerism, where we have cells in our body that are actually from other people, and this causes some messing up in DNA tests. They're reevaluating DNA evidence. There's a case of a mother who had children who were not related to her genetically. Their DNA was different from hers. And apparently this happens in about 60% of people. Chimerism, it's called. So cellular memory unlocked can call into question the very idea of identity. Are you you or are you someone else? Are you you and someone else? So isn't that interesting? Credite can be useful in this sort of exploration, if you care to go into that that type. Communicating with ancestors that may still reside within you, within your own cells. It's an interesting thing. I've been discussing it with some people, and it's kind of scary and interesting at the same time. So that's our crystal of the month, credite, something you might want to add to your arsenal of crystal weapons in your toolkit. The Crystal Silence League, of course, is founded, for those of you who don't know, in 1917 by Claude Alexander Conlin for the expressed purpose of providing prayer and positive affirmation to those who need it. When he passed into the silence around 1958, of course, the Crystal Silence League went with him until it was revived on the cybernet by adepts of the Missionary Independent Spiritual Church, and you can find us at www.crystalsilenceleague.org. And on there you'll find that you can post prayers. Prayers are always free at Crystal Silence League. You can also join us with a small donation. You can buy crystal balls from us. And with a $5 crystal purchase, you get one of Mr. Conlin's instruction booklets on how to do crystal gazing. We also discuss it in our newsletter, which you can subscribe to for free. Prayer is always free on Crystal Silence League, and we get literally hundreds of those a week. Literally. I'm not exaggerating. This is not hyperbole. This is truth. And it's my custom to print out some of those and read them aloud anonymously. And I ask you to join me in sending prayer and positive affirmation to the following people. I only identify them by prayer ID number. We protect anonymity on this program. So let's begin. We start with prayer ID number 43302AA, who prays for help with the finances and to find a decent living situation. It needs a steady room that is safe, clean, and comfortable, and the dollars to pay for it. We also have prayer ID number 43301SES, who needs a friend, ME, to break up with her boyfriend and move on from an abusive relationship. We also have prayer ID number 43300KW, who's a grad student in the last week of the master's degree and has a sensation of drowning and needs help, needs the strength to carry on and to excel. Let's send her strength. Prayer ID number 43299DES needs patience until her prayers are manifested. Prayer ID number 43298AL needs to be admitted to law school and needs prayer that she will be accepted for the graduate program and the law school. Pray ID number 43297AL. Prays that you'll finish the business plan and cash flow on time and submit it and be approved. A lot of ambitious people praying, and that warms my heart. That warms my heart. People aren't praying to win the lottery and to have a truck fall from the clouds into their front yard. We get that sometimes. We've had people pray for new hubcaps and things, and things like that. We really do. These are ambitious and hardworking people we have this week. Prayer ID number 43296MM. Prays for a job for his or her nephew. Nephew started graduate school in the U.S. in the fall. International student, again, a very ambitious young man. Prays for a job, all obstacles to be removed. Prayer ID number 43295, prays for his or her sister who's looking for a good job opportunity in her field. Again, success and prosperity to these people. Prayer ID number 43294KS needs her faith to be restored so that she will not give in to anger or malice towards the people who stood in her way to an appeal board who denied her some money. Prayer ID number 43293EB has health problems and is looking at surgery and needs strength and wants us to pray for her to get through this and to be healed. Prayer ID number 43292 needs medicine and also resolution in a relationship and apartment situation. Basically, everything's hitting at once, so may this person have the strength and the good luck and the fortune and the circumstances to get through this situation. Prayer ID number 43291, MW, needs an end to gossip and backbiting from his enemies. Prayer ID number 43290, LA, needs justice, as apparently an ex stole all the life savings and needs light at the end of the tunnel, needs for the police to do something about this. We have prayer number 43289, SS, needs prayer for S, and needs for S to be happy. And the situation is not well described, but apparently S is in a situation and she wants him to be happy. We also have prayer ID number 43286, JA, sees numbers everywhere, and apparently these numbers are sending some kind of message, and this person needs a miracle to help get a job, relocate, and take back her destiny. And she feels these numbers are significant to that. May she get an insight as to what this cryptic message means. Prayer ID number 43285, RW, needs removal of curses and crossing. She has cross conditions, her friend R, and apparently pets and children are involved in these cross conditions and needs a lifting of the curses, a lifting of the uncrossing. We need to send positive energy and prayer to remove these conditions. I would also suggest consulting a specialist in that area for cleansing and uncrossing. Prayer ID number 43283, ask us to pray for a friend, Jay, who has been diagnosed with lung cancer. Let's all take a moment now to send positive prayers and affirmations to all those in need of those of same. And start now. and I am here. Our topic this week is, of course, the Mahasatipatthana Sutta, attributed to the Lord Buddha. It is part of the Pali Canon of the Theravada scriptures, and it is a very, very complex, difficult, and challenging description of cultivating the qualities of awareness. These are the factors, one of the four wings of awakening, of enlightenment. Awareness is one of them. It's not just ordinary awareness. This is supra-mundane awareness, supra-normal awareness that's necessary to enlightenment. I want to tell you that we, in my tradition of Buddhism, Theravada Buddhism, we always started any lesson or any meditation with paying homage to the Buddha in the Pali language, and the traditional way of doing that is Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arhato Sammasambuddhassa, which translated is homage to him, the Bhagavan, Bhagavato, the Bhagavan, the blessed teacher, the Arhato, the enlightened one, the Arhat, the Sammasambuddhassa, the fully enlightened Buddha. There's only one Sammasambuddha. There can be many Buddhas. Anyone who achieves Bodhi mind, can be considered a Buddha, but only one Sammasambuddha, the fully enlightened Buddha. And that, of course, in our lifetime, in our generation, in our world system, was Prince Gautama, the historical Buddha. And whenever I get on an airplane and it starts to get off the ground, I always go, Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arhato Sammasambuddhassa, you know, in case it crashes. That's what I want in my mind. It's kind of my version of the Lord's Prayer. So last week we discussed various contemplations, the contemplation of breath, the contemplation of mind, the contemplation of the body, and the morbid contemplations. This week we're going to pick up where we left off, the observation of mental contents. And section A of that is the section on hindrances. These are the five hindrances. These are very important. These are sometimes called fetters, fetters being chains or bonds. And the five hindrances are wonderfully important. These are marvelous concepts to be aware of. You have essentially in this Mahasatipatthana Sutta the essence of Buddha's teachings condensed in this complex and challenging sutta. And you do need somebody. You need a teacher to unpack it and give you insight in it, because you try to read this, you go, what? Because there's a lot in it. But we shall begin. In the words of the Buddha, again, monks, how does a monk dwell observing mental contents in mental contents? Here, monks, a monk dwells observing mental contents in mental contents as regards the five hindrances. How, monks, does a monk dwell observing mental contents in mental contents? As regards the five hindrances. Here, monks, a monk, whenever sense desire is present in him, he understands properly that sense desire is present in me. Whenever sense desire is absent from him, he understands properly that sense desire is absent from me. He understands properly how sense desire that has not yet arisen in him comes to arise. He understands properly how sense desire that has now arisen in him gets eradicated. He understands properly how sense desire that has not been eradicated will in future no longer arise in him. Sense desire is the craving of the senses for stimulation. The eye craves to see, the ears to hear, the tongue to taste, the touch to feel, the mind to think. Whenever aversion is present in him, he understands properly that aversion is present in me. Whenever aversion is absent from him, he understands properly that aversion is absent from me. He understands properly how aversion that has not yet arisen in him comes to arise. He understands properly how aversion that has now arisen in him gets eradicated. He understands properly how aversion that has now been eradicated will in future no longer arise in him. Aversion is another important concept to understand. I will tell you that a lot of what we think of as compassion is actually aversion, and the distinction is important. In Buddhism, compassion is understood to be the universal desire for all sentient beings to be released from the causes and condition of suffering. And this is not a thing you go around putting out fires. You can't free someone from suffering by giving them money or from giving them a shot or from rescuing them from poverty. The only way the Buddha saw to free someone from suffering is to cut it off at the source. It's got to be a universal cure or it's no good. So a lot of what we see as compassion is really aversion. When we say, oh, I can't stand to see somebody suffer, that's not compassion, that's aversion. If it's causing us aversion, it's not compassion, it's aversion. And there's also sentimentality that's mistaken for compassion. And what I'm about to tell you may seem hard, but it's important to understand these things. Sentimentality is when we say things like, little children should not get sick. That's not logical. That doesn't make sense. That is saying that karma does not kick in until we're 18. Karma manifests from the moment you're born, sometimes before you're born, until the last breath, and it can manifest anywhere along that lines. To think things like little children should not suffer, while it causes aversion in us to see it, it's sentimental thinking. It's not compassionate thinking. Compassion arises when we offer comfort and we offer sympathy and we offer love. But to have a belief that children should not suffer, that certain people should not suffer, that good people should not suffer, that's sentimentality. It's not compassion. When we are appalled by suffering, that's not a constructive feeling. That's aversion. It does no good. It doesn't help anyone. So these are feelings that are often mistaken for compassion. Compassion is the universal wish for all sentient beings to be freed from the causes and conditions of suffering, not the symptoms of suffering, the causes and conditions of suffering. And as the Buddha taught, what causes suffering is sense desire. Nothing more, nothing less. Sense desire. So we move on. Now, if you don't believe that, put it to the test. Buddha had a saying, e pasiko, come and see, test it for yourself. He doesn't say accept this on faith, test it for yourself, come and see. He did not teach with a closed fist, he taught with an open hand. He said, come and see. If you don't believe it, see it for yourself. Next, the Buddha says, whenever sloth and torpor are present in him, he understands properly that sloth and torpor are present in me. Whenever sloth and torpor are absent from him, he understands properly that sloth and torpor are absent from me. He understands properly how sloth and torpor that have not yet arisen in him come to arise. He understands properly how sloth and torpor that have now arisen in him gets eradicated. Torpor, T-O-R-P-O-R, that's laziness. He understands properly how sloth and torpor that have now been eradicated will in future no longer arise in him. That's basically laziness and sluggishness. We move on. Whenever agitation and remorse are present in him, he understands properly agitation and remorse are present in me. Whenever agitation and remorse are absent from him, he understands properly that agitation and remorse are absent from me. He understands properly how agitation and remorse that have not yet arisen in him come to arise. He understands properly how agitation and remorse that have now arisen in him get eradicated. He understands properly how agitation and remorse that have now been eradicated will in future no longer arise in him. Agitation and remorse are also hindrances. These these prevent the mind from being at peace. We know from the Buddha that the mind's natural state is relaxed and aware in a state of equanimity. And agitation and remorse are not constructive. They're not constructive. They don't lead to liberation. So we move on. Whenever doubt is present in him, he understands properly that doubt is present in me. Whenever doubt is absent from him, he understands properly that doubt is absent from me. He understands properly how doubt that has not yet arisen in him comes to arise. He understands properly how doubt that has now arisen in him gets eradicated. He understands properly how doubt that has now been eradicated will in future no longer arise in him. Doubt, when the Buddha speaks of it, is doubt in the process of liberation. I tell people a lot, doubt will kill you in this kind of work. You cannot enter any kind of work like this with doubt in your mind. It will kill you. Thus he dwells observing mental contents and mental contents internally, or he dwells observing mental contents and mental contents externally. Or he dwells observing mental contents and mental contents both internally and externally. Thus he dwells observing the phenomenon of arising in the mental contents. Thus he dwells observing the phenomenon of passing away in the mental contents. Thus he dwells observing the phenomenon of arising and passing away in the mental contents. Now his awareness is established. These are mental contents. Thus he develops his awareness to such an extent that there is mere understanding along with mere awareness. In this way he dwells detached, without clinging toward anything in the world of mind and matter. This is how monks. A monk dwelling observing mental contents and mental contents as regards the five hindrances. This arising and passing away addresses the concept of how consciousness works. It's the model that Buddha posited, in which you can observe yourself in meditation, is that consciousness takes place in moments called cittas, C-I-T-T-A, cittas. And each citta is a tiny amount of time, and that consciousness exists in these little dit-dit-dit-dit-dit-dit moments. And only one consciousness can exist at a time. Now, the consciousnesses match up with the senses. There's eye consciousness, ear consciousness, feeling consciousness, taste consciousness, touch consciousness, mind consciousness. You can only get one at a time, but they happen so fast that you can go eye, ear, touch, etc. Arising with a sense consciousness comes fabrications. That's what these mental fabrications are. So when you see something, mental fabrications come up with it. These mental fabrications can be doubt, fear, aversion, desire, you see? When you see something, you go, ooh, I want it. Ooh, I hate it. Ooh, I don't like it. Ooh, it causes me fear. Ooh, those are mental fabrications, mental constructions. You hear something, ooh, I like it. Ooh, I want more of it. Ooh, I must have it. Ooh, I don't like that. Ooh, I hate it. Ooh, it does this. You see? That's how it arises. You taste something. Ooh, I love it. I must have more of it. Ooh, I hate it. I can't stand it. Ooh, you think something, a mental construction. In Buddhism, thought is the mind is a sense organ. It senses thought. So a thought appears. You go, ooh, I want to think more of that. Ooh, I hate that thought. Ooh, that thought causes me displeasure. Ooh, I want to think more of that thought. It causes me pleasure. Ooh, and you get attached. You get addicted to mind processes, and this happens. This is when you become attached to rites and rituals. You become addicted to certain ways of thinking. You become addicted to certain feelings. Feelings is also involved in there. These are mind content. Do you see? You see how this works? They arise and they fall. And when you become aware of that, how they arise and how they fall, they don't have that much power over you anymore. Now, unless you're really working toward enlightenment, most of us will never develop complete detachment. You got to give up everything. You have to take the robe and give up everything. I don't think you can exist in the real world and do this. You develop such a dispassion for human activity that you can't function in the real world. There's a belief in Buddhism, if you become a sotapatta, a stream enterer of the first step of enlightenment, you can't live unless you're in the society of monks. You'll wither and die. And I don't think this is a mystical thing. I just think that you can no longer be interested in the minutia of daily existence, of making a living and things. You have to join the community of monks. But these are mental contents, the things that arise with these various senses. You touch something, oh, it's so pleasurable. Ooh, I hate that. The things that arise, these are the things you become aware of. This is what we mean by awareness. You don't take it for granted these things just happen. You become aware of that when you see things, when you hear things, the what arises with these experiences. Buddha said the all, the A-W-L, A-L-L, capital A-L-L, all, everything, all. The all is sensory experience. That's all we know is sensory experience, experiential reality. Nothing outside of that can be proven to exist. That's what we experience. That's the only thing we know about reality, what we experience. And he says, you got to know everything about it. Everything that you experience, you have to know everything about it. So we go to section B on the aggregates. The aggregates are the skandhas, and these are what basically a human being consists of, the five aggregates. And so let's go into that. And again, we're looking at something very complex and very in-depth, and we'll take this apart as we can. And then we'll go to station identification to have a drink and take a break and digest it. Again, monks, says the Buddha, a monk dwells observing mental contents and mental contents as regards the five aggregates of clinging. How, monks, does a monk dwell observing mental contents and mental contents as regards the five aggregates of clinging? Here, monks, a monk understands properly, such as matter, such as the arising of matter, such as the passing away of matter, such are sensations, such as the arising of sensations, such as the passing away of sensations, such as perception, such as the arising of perception, such as the passing away of perception, such are reactions, such as the arising of reactions, such as the passing away of reactions, such as consciousness, such as the arising of consciousness, such as the passing away of consciousness. And there Buddha has named the five skandhas, or the five aggregates of clinging. Thus, he dwells observing mental contents and mental contents inwardly, or he dwells observing mental contents and mental contents externally, etc., etc. Now his awareness is established. These are mental contents. Thus, he develops his awareness to such an extent that there is mere understanding along with mere awareness. This is how a monk dwells observing mental contents and mental contents as regards the five aggregates of clinging. I believe we should take time to understand the five aggregates. There's rupa, matter. This is everything solid. This is your body. Then there's sensations. These are feelings, and those are the feelings of fear, aversion. The things that you feel. There's usually aversion, desire, aversion, fear, things like that. Those are feelings. What are called reactions here? I've heard called mental formations. These are the things that arise in your mind when you see or touch or think. We talked about those a minute ago. You know, ooh, I like that. Ooh, I don't like that. They're usually positive, negative, or indifferent. I like that. I don't like that. Or I neither like it or not like it. Consciousness are the six sense consciousness. Eye consciousness, ear consciousness, taste consciousness, touch consciousness, I'm leaving one out, and mind consciousness. Let's see, there's eye, ear, nose. Yeah, nose consciousness, taste consciousness, touch consciousness, and mind consciousness. With every consciousness, there are three factors. There's the consciousness gate, the consciousness object, and the arising of the consciousness. So with eye, just to give you an example, there's got to be the object of consciousness. That's what you see. You're looking at an apple. That's the object of eye consciousness. The gate of eye consciousness, that's the eyeball itself. The eye does not see. That's the gate. And the arising of eye consciousness, and that's what actually sees. That is what actually arises in whatever. That the eye consciousness is what arises. We don't say that there's anything that sees. eye consciousness sees the apple. There's not a mind that sees the apple. Eye consciousness sees the apple. The same thing with touch. There's got to be something you touch, like you touch the table. You rub your hand on the table. That's the touch object. The touch gate is your skin. And touch consciousness is what arises in your mind that says, I'm touching the table. Now, perception is basically memory. Perception is that which marks, that which perceives. And when the first time, for instance, you come across a chocolate chip cookie, you don't know what it is. So you touch it, you taste it, you conduct an investigation, and your mind stores this information. You say, you know, it smells this way, it looks this way, it touches this way. So the next time you see a chocolate chip cookie, perception goes, ah, a chocolate chip cookie, bam, you know it. Say though it's an oatmeal raisin cookie, perception says, that's a lot like a chocolate chip cookie, and then adds to the information. Perception is that which perceives. It marks objects. And so these are the aggregates that arise. Now, perception also mixes in there the mental formations, because part of that memory is, oh, I like chocolate chip cookies. Or it might be, I like chocolate chip cookies, but I prefer oatmeal raisin. So this is part of perception's job. Perception is memory, more or less, but a little bit more than memory. It recognizes and it remembers. So that is what perception is. That's a vast oversimplification, but those are the five aggregates. So now we have C, the section on the sense spheres. And the Buddha says, again, monks, a monk dwells observing mental contents and mental contents as regards the six internal and external sense spheres. How, monks, does a monk dwell observing mental contents and mental contents as regards the six internal and external sense spheres? Here, monks, a monk understands properly the eye. He understands properly the visible object, and he understands properly the bondage that arises dependent on these two. He understands properly how the bondage that has not yet arisen comes to arise. He understands properly how the bondage that has not now arisen gets eradicated. He understands properly how that bondage that is now eradicated in future no longer arises. He understands properly the ear. We're going down the five senses now. He understands properly sound, and he understands properly the bondage that arises dependent on these two. He understands properly how the bondage that has not yet arisen comes to arise. He understands properly how the bondage that has now arisen gets eradicated. He understands properly how that bondage that has now been eradicated will in the future no longer arise. This is very important. Understand why he's using the word bondage. He understands properly the nose. He understands properly smell, and he understands properly the bondage that arises dependent on these two. He understands properly how the bondage that has not yet arisen comes to arise. He understands properly how the bondage that has now arisen gets eradicated. He understands properly how that bondage that has now been eradicated will in the future no longer arise. He understands properly the tongue. He understands properly taste. And he understands properly the bondage that arises dependent on these two. He understands properly how the bondage that has not yet arisen comes to arise. He understands properly how the bondage that is not now arisen gets eradicated. He understands properly how that bondage that has now been eradicated will in future no longer arises. He understands properly the body. He understands properly touch. And he understands properly the bondage that arises dependent on these two. He understands properly how the bondage that has not yet arisen comes to arise. He understands properly how the bondage that has now arisen gets eradicated. He understands properly how that bondage that has now been eradicated will in future no longer arise. He understands properly the mind. He understands properly the contents of the mind. And he understands properly the bondage that has arisen dependent on these two. He understands properly how the bondage that has not yet arisen comes to arise. He understands properly how the bondage that has now arisen gets eradicated. He understands properly how that bondage that has now been eradicated will in future no longer arise. Thus he dwells observing mental contents and mental contents internally, externally, or he dwells observing mental contents and mental contents both internally and externally. Thus he dwells observing the phenomenon of arising in the mental contents. Thus he dwells observing the phenomenon of passing away in the mental contents. Thus he dwells observing the phenomenon arising and passing away in the mental contents. Now as awareness is established, these are mental contents. Thus he develops his awareness to such an extent that there is mere understanding along with mere awareness. In this way he dwells detached, without clinging toward anything in the world of mind and matter. This is how a monk dwells observing mental contents and mental contents as regards the six internal and external sense spheres. And why this is important, we will explore when we come back after station identification.
You are listening to the LMC Radio Network, whose art and information may be found on its webcast shows. The LMC Radio Network is a community radio alliance of metaphysical, spiritual, inspirational, and political justice broadcasters spanning a wide range of topics. Tune in Sundays for the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, hosted by Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ali. It features panel discussions on traditional African American hoodoo spellcasting with members of the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, plus free readings and magical rootwork advice for live call-in clients. The longest-running conjure show in the universe, it may be heard from 3 o'clock to 4:30 Pacific Time, Sunday afternoons. On Mondays, get ready for Candelo's Corner, starring Candelo Cambisa. This is the meeting place for all esoteric traditions. Candelo brings his insight as a polero and eclectic spiritualist to his interviews with peers in Afro-Caribbean lineages, as well as representatives of numerous other spiritualities and religions. You can hear Candelo's Corner Monday evenings from 5 to 7 Pacific Time. Tuesdays feature two wonderful shows to suit your taste. On the Crystal Silence League Hour, John St. Germain provides spiritual guidance and tips on the practical use of crystals and crystal balls. His show starts at 5 p.m. Pacific Time and lasts for 1 hour. Next is In the Streets with Beverly Smith. Beverly provides up-to-the-minute reports on civil and social rights issues. Her one-hour show airs on Tuesday evenings at 6 p.m. Pacific Time. On Wednesday nights, Kai Arman broadcasts On Sacred Ground, a tapestry of our times, comprising history, ethnography, and shamanism, featuring the voices of the land and the deceased, aided by scholars, spirit workers, and environmentalists. Kai's show airs from 5 to 7 Pacific Time. On Thursdays, it's the Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield. In a variety show laced with country wit and biblical wisdom, the professor shares his knowledge of roots, delivers the lucky numbers, and explores the secrets of scriptural sorcery. From 6 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Time, there's no end to the surprises. And on Saturday nights, come out and join Liquid Libations. Andrea Weston hosts this informal sharing and showcasing of poetry, short stories, and spoken word performances contributed by novices and professional wordsmiths. Call in and read your work. Liquid Libations may be heard on Saturday nights from 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific Time. All shows on the LMC Radio Network are sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company, located in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com. Add 3 hours for Eastern, tax and license may apply, train departure times and Burma shape signs subject to change without notice. LMC.
What a lineup we have. And we're discussing the Maha Satipatthana Sutta, and we're talking about the bondage between the senses and the sense object. And you think, why is that a bondage? I like looking at pretty things, and I don't like looking at not pretty things. Well, the end game in Buddhism is to break the cycle of rebirth. And as many of you know about Buddhism, there's a concept that birth and death is part of a process. And this is a process that has gone on since beginningless time. That's a term Buddha used, beginningless time. He said no one remembers the beginning of it. There's no one who can remember or conceive the beginning of it. And I always talk to people about this you know, a lot of people who are creationists, they say, well, how do you think the universe got here? And I say, well, it's always been here. And they say, well, how did it get here? And I say, well, you talk about a creator. How did the creator get here? And they say, well, the creator has always been here. I say, so you say that the creator has always been here, but you can't fathom that the universe has always been here. You see, that's a logical disconnect. If a creator can always be here, then the universe can always be here. You know, it's a logical disconnect. Buddha talks about world cycles, that the universe expands to a certain point, and then it contracts down to nothing, and then it expands again. And this is called a world cycle. And for every world cycle, there's a Buddha. We have Sakyamuni Buddha. Before him was Buddha Kassapa. He names 12 Buddhas that existed before him in 12 different world cycles. There was Buddha Kassapa before him, and Buddha Kassapa predicted the coming of the Sakyamuni Buddha, the Sakyan Buddha. And there will not be another Buddha, another Sammasambuddha, until the next world cycle, and that will be Maitreya, or Maitreya Buddha, the Laughing Buddha, who is now in on the road of ascension of the Bodhisattva path. He's presumably in the highest of heavens, waiting for his rebirth. So the end game of Buddhism is to get off this cycle of rebirth, because human rebirth is considered rare. It's considered a very rare thing. It's the fruiting of beneficial karmic acts, and it's rare. Consciousness, once it's disembodied, clings to existence. See, this is the bondage of experience. The eye is in bondage to sight. The ear is in bondage to hearing. We crave existence. This desire that we have for experience, once we're disembodied, consciousness clings to whatever it can. The undisciplined consciousness, it craves experience so much, it clings to whatever it can. And if your last death moment is of craving and clinging, if it's hunger driven, this conditions the factors of your rebirth. It's not reincarnation. This is a Hindu concept. It's rebirth. It's rebecoming. The word is actually not translatable. It's Pumbarva. And it's not translatable in English. The most accurate, the closest is rebecoming. But Pumbarva. And I actually have it right here. Yeah, Pumbava, which means, again, existence. That's the closest we can come to it. There's other longer terms, Samvatanika Vijnana, stream of consciousness, Vinyata Soltam. But nowhere is it reincarnation, re-embodiment, which would require the transmigration of a soul. When John St. Germain dies, John St. Germain ends, but there's a continuity of consciousness that that is passed on into a re-becoming. And karma is a two-part process. Karma is action, thought, and deed. What arises from that is vipaka, the fruits of that karma, and that is the soul, that is the most important. The most important aspect of that is the condition of rebirth. So the end game of Buddhism is to loosen your grip on our addiction to experience. And by loosening that grip on the addiction of experience, enlightenment is liberation. It's freeing the mind of the causes and conditions that hold us into bondage of existence. And if you can get your mind around that addictive clinging is what causes all this suffering, then you got your foot poised above the water there. You know, you just step away from being a stream enterer, and you're not far from getting getting where you need to be. The I'm going to tell you that this is a difficult concept to get your mind around. It's a difficult lesson to learn. Buddhism is sometimes considered pessimistic because of this emphasis on suffering, but it's not pessimistic because Buddha says, yes, there's suffering, but here's the way out. And that's the good news. You know, there's a way out of this, but it's not free. You know, it's not handed to you. It requires work. But the work has a payoff. Even if you don't have the end game inside, even if you don't get complete enlightenment, become a Buddha, life becomes better, and it becomes easier, and it becomes more simple. It becomes simpler, and you're just generally a lot happier. And so we talked about the clinging aggregates. We talked about the sense spheres, and we can move on to the factors of enlightenment. We don't have that much time. We have about 8 minutes, but then we can get started on that. Section D, the section on the factors of enlightenment. And now we get down to the nitty-gritty. This is where the rubber hits the road, man. Again, monks, a monk dwells observing mental contents and mental contents as regards the seven factors of enlightenment. How, monks, does a monk dwell observing mental contents and mental contents as regards the seven factors of enlightenment? Here, monks, a monk understands properly that when the factor of enlightenment awareness is present in him, the factor of enlightenment awareness is present in me. He understands properly that when the factor of enlightenment awareness is absent from him, the factor of awareness is absent from me. He understands properly how the factor of enlightenment awareness that has not yet arisen in him comes to arise. He understands properly how the factor of enlightenment awareness that has now arisen is developed and perfected. When the factor of enlightenment, investigation of Dharma, is present in him, he understands properly the factor of enlightenment, investigation of Dharma, is present in me. Investigation of Dharma is contemplating the Eightfold Path and the Four Noble Truths. It's present in me. He understands properly that when the factor of enlightenment, investigation of Dharma, and boy, the Pali word for that is a jawbreaker, Dharma Vikaya Sambojaragama, is absent from him. The factor of enlightenment, investigation of Dharma, is absent from me. He understands properly how the factor of enlightenment, investigation of Dharma that has not yet arisen in him, comes to arise. He understands properly how the factor of enlightenment, investigation of Dharma that has now arisen, is developed and perfected. Sometimes it's called Dharma Eye. It's called the Dharma Eye. It's when you can see for yourself the existence of the Dharma, the truth, the way. You just see it for yourself. When the factor of enlightenment, effort, is present in him, he understands properly the factor of enlightenment, effort, is present in me. He understands properly that when the factor of enlightenment, effort, is absent from him, the factor of enlightenment, effort, is absent from me. And that's right effort. That's proper effort. That's a properly focused effort. The factor of enlightenment, effort, is absent from me. He understands properly how the factor of enlightenment, effort, that has not yet arisen in him, comes to arise. He understands properly how the factor of enlightenment that has now arisen is developed and perfected. When the factor of enlightenment, rapture, is present in him, he understands properly the factor of enlightenment, rapture, is present in me. That's not the one where you disappear, you know, the trumpet blows and you disappear. This is a joyous certainty that you're on the path. This is when you know, I've got it. Man, I've got it, I've got it. Yeah, I've got it. That's what you usually say. Hey, I've got it. Yeah. Is present in me. He understands properly that when the factor of enlightenment, rapture, is absent from him, the factor of enlightenment, rapture, is absent from me. He understands properly how the factor of enlightenment, rapture, that has not yet arisen in him, comes to arise. He understands properly how the factor of enlightenment, rapture, that has now arisen, is developed and perfected. When the factor of enlightenment, tranquility, is present in him, he understands properly the factor of enlightenment, tranquility, is present in me. he understands properly that when the factor of enlightenment, tranquility, is absent from him, the factor of enlightenment, tranquility, is absent from me. He understands properly how the factor of enlightenment, tranquility, that has not yet arisen in him, comes to arise. He understands properly how the factor of enlightenment, tranquility, that has now arisen, is developed and perfected. When the factor of enlightenment, concentration, is present in him, he understands properly the factor of enlightenment, concentration, is present in me. Usually in the suttas, when Buddha is mentioning concentration, he's talking about meditation. He's talking about usually a vipassana or anapanasati meditation, the concentration on breath is present in me. He understands properly that when the factor of enlightenment, concentration, is absent from him, the factor of enlightenment, concentration, is absent from me. He understands properly how the factor of enlightenment, concentration, that has not yet arisen in him, comes to arise. He understands properly how the factor of enlightenment, concentration, that has now arisen, is developed and perfected. When the factor of enlightenment, equanimity, is present in him, he understands properly the factor of enlightenment, equanimity, is present in me. He understands properly that when the factor of enlightenment, equanimity, is absent from him, the factor of enlightenment, equanimity, is absent from me. He understands properly how the factor of enlightenment, equanimity, that has not yet arisen in him, comes to arise. He understands properly how the factor of enlightenment, equanimity, that has now arisen, is developed and perfected. We've discussed equanimity before as one of the four divine abodes. Equanimity is an even state of mind, an emotional even keel. Thus he dwells, observing mental contents and mental contents internally, or he dwells observing mental contents and mental contents both internally and externally. Thus he dwells observing the phenomenon of arising in the mental contents. Thus he dwells observing the phenomenon of passing away in the mental contents. Thus he dwells observing the phenomenon of arising and passing away in the mental contents. Now his awareness is established. These are mental contents. Thus he develops his awareness to such an extent that there is mere understanding along with mere awareness. In this way, he dwells detached, without clinging toward anything in the world of mind and matter. This is how a monk dwells observing mental contents and mental contents as regards the seven factors of enlightenment. The next section, E, is on the Noble Truths. These are the four noble truths, the fundamental teachings of Buddhism, common to all schools of Buddhism. And this is an exposition. And we will start this discussion in part three, I guess, next week, because we're getting down to the very fundamental essence of Buddhism when we talk about the noble truths. We're talking about suffering, the arising of suffering, the cause of suffering, and the cessation of suffering. And, man, that's what it's all about. So thank you so much for joining us in this discussion of this most challenging, most provocative, and sometimes disturbing discourse of the greatest man that ever lived, I think, the man that showed us the way out, Gautama Buddha, in his magnificent discussion, the Mahasatipatthana Sutta, part three next week, God willing, and Buddha willing. I'm John St. Germain. This is the Crystal Silence League Hour. Much love to everyone who's patient enough to sit through these discussions. We go all over the place, don't we? And if you have any questions, do email us. You do have our information. Visit the website, subscribe to the newsletter, and see you next week.